With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
Welcome back to Heard Tell. Okay, something really interesting happened back during the Memorial Day weekend, or more specifically, what didn't happen. It was one of the worst movie weekends in decades, almost of the entire modern era, in a weekend that is usually super hyped up on movies. So this has some things we need to discuss cultural-wise. So we go to the guy that we always talk about when we need to talk about movies, Luis Mendez, Mendez Movie Report, double board certified. This is not just some guy on YouTube that's just mad. He's a certified film critic on multiple panels. He knows what he's talking about. And the great thing about Luis is he doesn't just say, I like this movie, I don't like this movie. He knows the history. He's written pieces all the way back to the silent film era, stuff back in the 1910s and 20s. He knows the full history. He can discuss anything. He can discuss the culture of things like Godzilla, which is one of his favorites, the Marvel movies. He can talk about the real serious Norse stuff. He can talk about the classic films, but he can also really discuss the business of films. And we've had him on a lot, and we've talked a lot about how streaming and in-person movie theaters experience has changed, especially post-COVID, things like this. What happened on this Memorial Day weekend? Because I think there's some cultural stuff going on, and there's a real change in entertainment. And it goes right back to the streaming debate we've been having for years now. It goes to a couple of things. You can't just say the economy, though. And here's an important stat for why the box office was so bad. It wasn't just economic. It's not like COVID where nobody's going out, or it's not like a recession year where people's money's tight, so they cut out discretionary spending. Travel records were broken during the same period. So folks had money to go things and places and do things. They just weren't going to the movies. So we'll talk about some of the tent poles. We'll talk about the lack of some of the blockbusters that folks we think, the business of movies and how movies is and isn't affecting our culture the way it is, how streaming's starting to affect it. This is stuff that gets to our entertainment value, how we intake things like culture. And we love talking about it with Luis Mendez. Mendez Movie Report, great guy, really knows what he's talking about. We always have a great conversation, and we'll have that conversation right after this on Heard Tell.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Heard Tell. Okay, we need to talk about movies because normally Memorial Day weekend is this huge movie weekend, one of the biggest of the years, and it wasn't to an epic degree one of the worst in really the modern era, but at least in the last three, four decades. So we're going to go to the guy we always talk movies with, Mendez Movie Report, double board certified film critic. He doesn't just do this. He knows what he's talking about. Also talk about the business in the movies. Luis Mendez, how are you, my friend? Great to have you back.
Doing pretty good. Apparently doing a little better than the box office was during Memorial Day weekend, but doing good. I've been, you know, it's been a slow start to the movie year, but I do think that there have been some really good movies out there if people go and check them out.
Yeah, what happened here? Because I remember back in January and February just reading stuff. People were already talking about this was going to be maybe a bit of a down year for movies. We've had a couple of good years in a row. There's no big tentpole Marvel stuff. There's no Top Gun Maverick. There's no Barbenheimer. So early in the year, people kind of knew that this might be a down summer. I don't think they were expecting this, though.
No. If anything, the spring had a more of a pop to it between Dune 2, Kung Fu Panda 4, and Godzilla and Kong, which I believe at the moment are the top three highest grossers. But this has not been the greatest start. The Fall Guy honestly started this all off with its underperformance. Even though that movie has actually had pretty decent legs, the problem for that movie is that it's already available in VOD. So that's going to kind of cut off its legs already. And then Furiosa didn't do as hot as some people were hoping it would do. And Garfield really did not do as good as you would think a kid's movie would do. But I do wonder if a lot of this is also that people are so desperate to see a Barbenheimer situation happen that we didn't take into account that Furiosa was maybe not ever going to be that big blockbuster hit that people thought it would be. Because if I remember, Fandango at the beginning of every year comes out with a list of like most anticipated movies, and they're based on actual audience feedback, not critics and stuff like that. Now, you know, not movie junkies like me. And I don't believe Furiosa was on that list. And if it was on that list, it was definitely not high on the list. And then if you go back and look at Mad Max Fury Road, which, by the way, was 9 years ago, so that has something to do with this is a 9 years in between here. That movie didn't do amazing box office either. And that was in an era where box office did better than it did today. You know, it's a rated R film. Rated R films can always have a bit of a struggle. There's a reason why a B plus cinema score for a rated R film tends to be a good sign, whereas that wouldn't be a good sign for, say, a family film. For Garfield, not doing so well on Memorial Day, I think a big part of that is Garfield really isn't part of the American culture the way that it was when I was younger. I don't know how many kids necessarily grow up with Garfield these days. And that, unlike Furiosa, which had great reviews, Garfield didn't have the greatest reviews, and that may have hurt it. Not the greatest word of mouth. It got a B plus cinema score. Not great for a family movie to get a B plus cinema score. You usually wouldn't be in the A's with a family movie. So I don't think the word of mouth from that movie was particularly great. Now, we do have an extremely quiet weekend coming up, so maybe we can see some signs of life. Remember last year, Elemental didn't do so hot coming out of the gate, and then that movie ended up making like $500 million anyway. So it'll be interesting to see if we get some legs for Furiosa, given the good word of mouth. But I do wonder if this was a situation where everyone's so desperate for that Barbenheimer sort of success that they don't take into account these other problems that might have plagued a movie's potential for success.
Yeah, Luis Mendez joining us. Mendez Movie Report on Substack. You can find it there. The thing with the Barbenheimer, though, is we know what pops a box office. You either have just this amazing movie with word of mouth where it, you know, gets a couple week run. It used to be you'd get 2 months run. Now you get 3 or 4 weeks run. That's a good run. But you get massive word of mouth. You get a generational situation like a Top Gun Maverick, like, you know, Avengers, the Endgame, that sort. You know, those are really generational movies when you think about it. They had multi-year builds. They had expectations that was beyond that stuff. Barbieheimer hit the sweet spot because it became a family movie, because Oppenheimer is obviously an R, you know, a hard R for a lot of reasons, some of which were criticized. We talked about it at the time. But parents could go to that, or dad could go to that. Kids and mom could go to Barbie. Everybody was dressed up. You could go to the movies as a family at the same time for Barbieheimer. is my point. So yeah, you were getting all the audience all at the same time. Family movies do well because they have a bigger audience than R-rated movies most of the time, just general population, more people can go see them. Kids want to go. You take three or four kids instead of just two parents going or a couple or whatever the case may be. Doesn't this just go to the economics of the problems that theaters are having? Is if you don't have an event type situation, or you really don't have, just having a movie star ain't enough to get people in a theater anymore. Just having a good movie isn't really enough to get people in the theater anymore if it's not an event. And now we're going to talk about it in a minute with the business side of this. Everything's so front loaded to your movie opening on your business model, because there's no DVD money anymore. There's no VHS money anymore. Isn't this the core of the problem of the movie theater experience in the whole? Is just like, if you don't have an event, you ain't getting a crowd. That's pretty that simple, isn't it? Because we know this wasn't a recession thing. This wasn't a money thing. We had record travel this week, Memorial Day weekend. We know folks had money. They just weren't interested in what was offered.
Yeah. And the problem is that we really have got into a situation where you got to make a big splash on opening weekend. Legs, they still happen. We saw it with Elemental last year, but it's harder to pull off because just 2-3 weeks after when some of these movies come out, it's already on VOD. The studios are much easier to wave the white flag these days than they were in the past. I mean, like, there are some classics of past years that when you look at their box office, you realize that those were movies that kind of had to get discovered and legged out. I believe, I mean, one of my favorite examples is the Santa Claus, the first one. That movie I don't think it even opened number one. I think it actually fell behind to the remake of Miracle on 34th Street. And then that just ended up legging out thanks to good word of mouth, ends up becoming a modern holiday classic. But then we have these situations where the studios now, before seeing if a movie can leg out, basically give up on it. So now you have a situation where you need an event film that's going to make such a big splash. The only event film, I mean, again, the event films that we've had this year are Dune and Godzilla and Kong, I guess you could say, because that made a bigger splash than even I expected it would that opening weekend. So it's weird because a movie making about $30 to $40 million on opening weekend in the old days felt like, okay, you can build off of this. This isn't a huge massive stuff, but you can build off of this. You can get some good word of mouth and maybe have a respectable final box office haul. It's not that way anymore. Now, if you're making that kind of money opening weekend, unless you're obviously like a smaller film or one of the small horror flicks, it's freak out time. And it's just unfortunate because it really has gotten to the point now where if it's not an event film, people won't show up, and you're going to need word of mouth to get people to come. I mean, even if you were to take something, if we're going to take something that's original and was this sort of bit of a cultural moment for a certain generation, Everything Everywhere All at Once 2 years ago, that didn't make a huge splash. That took word of mouth. That took it becoming this thing with young people. It's really hard to pull that off these days because, and especially with these big studios and big films, because already you have all these massive expectations, and the box office becomes what everybody's talking about, which is a little unfortunate sometimes because, some of these movies like Furiosa do have great word of mouth. It's one thing to have good word of mouth. It's another to actually have the numbers of audiences showing up.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, Luis Mendez joining us. It's interesting we bring this up. Netflix's head, and I hope I'm getting his name right, Ted Sarandos, I think is his name. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. The head of Netflix, he's been there since the beginning, since the mail to the DVD box, right, days. He had some really interesting comments in this really deep interview on the New York Times. And one of the things he talked about, we're going to link to it on the Substack notes. Make sure you read this whole interview. It's really interesting. One of the things he brought up was, we just talked about the business model. They've lost almost half of their revenue on opening a movie because you don't have the home digital, everything's digital now. So you don't have DVD, VHS. That used to be almost like a second opening as far as the revenue for a movie came in. So you could take a bigger swing because, like, well, it didn't do good in the box office. We'll make up for it when the DVD sells. That's gone now. You don't have that anymore. He brought up a great point. It goes to exactly what you were just talking about. They asked him the question, and I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit, read his own answers, but he was talking about is that big opening weekend now, a lot of movies are made to be international movies. Does it appeal to the Chinese market? Does it appeal to Europe? Is it going to be a world? Because they're trying to expand the audience base to make up that bigger number on that initial release, right? And what he was saying was something like Netflix, the streamers, where everything's getting more international. You can stream an international show. You can watch program like Gomorrah. It's an Italian, you know, mobster kind of thing. I love that show. It's in Italian. You normally wouldn't find that without streamers. Things like this. Even a Downton Abbey, it came out on PBS, but it's an international thing. He brought up a great point. He's like, look, this is hurting the movie business because these wider titles sometimes don't appeal to an American audience and they're seeking these international audiences, but it's helping the streamers because then it's just expanding your world. And they just can't afford to take these big swings at the movies anymore. This business, people are talking about, they get tired of remixes and they get tired of remakes. And why doesn't Hollywood have any original ideas? There's some of that to it, but a lot of this is business driven in it because they've got this international market and they got to hit that initial number. And it's really affecting the product at the movie. And streamers don't have to worry about that. It's actually playing into the strength of the streamers. That's part of this streamer theater disconnect I don't think we talk about enough.
Well, and the situation is that if you look at all the highest-grossing films, they tend to be IP films. So it's understandable that the studios are gotten to a point where they realize that they need something that is going to hit. That's gonna everyone's gonna see, say, "Oh, I know that. I'm comfortable going to see that." I would say that if the studios want to mitigate potential losses but still do original stuff, they should try to look into what the smaller places are doing, whether it be an A24 Neon, and try to see if they could be a little bit more careful with their budgets to try to get some more and get some word of mouth going. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be for original stuff, because remember back in 2017, it made like $700 million off, I think it was just a $70 million budget. So I would say that one of the things that the studios need to do is to be careful with their budgets. Now, in terms of the Netflix component of this, everybody knows that, especially after what the pandemic conditioned people to do, is that streaming has become a bigger part of how people consume media. It's just, look, I love the movie theater experience. I'm a big into seeing movies at the big on the big screen, but there are a lot of people who are part of my community of moviegoers that are in denial over how much more comfortable it is for someone to sit down at their own home, get their own popcorn, get their own soda, or drink of or alcohol choice, and be able to choose from such a massive library from whatever streamer they use to discover TV shows to binge or movies to watch. And I've seen it even from looking at a app, the Letterboxd app, which is a has a very big hardcore cinephile community. But you can notice when a movie is on a streamer on there, because all of a sudden it starts to explode on the Letterboxd app. You start seeing it because the Letterboxd likes to list what are the top movies being watched and such. And you'll see it on there like almost like it just came out in theaters again. So this is something that's happening even for people who try to really hype up the movie theater experience. And it is a lot. You're right that there's a lot of international stuff that might be more easily discovered and niches being found through streaming. I mean, remember Squid Game and what a massive big thing that was. That was supposed to be what it was. That was this South Korean thing that Netflix picked up, and then it suddenly exploded to become what it was. So I'm in agreement that there's definitely a streaming component. Now, that being said, in that same interview, he also made comments claiming that Barbenheimer would have been bigger on Netflix. I can't agree with that, because I think the situation is that one of the things that the theater experience could have over streaming is that with streaming, it does kind of feel like sometimes these big events that they have, particularly Netflix, it feels like it kind of comes and goes. Whereas with the theatrical experience, it does seem to stick around and really bleed into the cultural moment of that year or season, whatever you want to call it, however you want to define the zeitgeist. And that, I think, theaters still have over streaming. I mean, you look at something like Stranger Things, which is a massive thing for Netflix. It doesn't feel like that's seeped into the culture as much, because it feels very like it comes and it goes. It comes and it goes. And we've seen this from a lot of things from streaming. Even if you take the most respected movies from streaming, the stuff that Netflix tries to go out and win awards with, they've tended to be more on the art house kind of side. So these are movies that maybe leave a mark in film schools, but not necessarily in the cultural moment. I don't feel like Netflix has been able to, maybe you can argue if they've hit that with a few TV shows, but I don't feel like there's a movie that Netflix has been able to hit a cultural moment with. They get people talking and buzzing for a week or two, but it doesn't necessarily seep into the zeitgeist the way some of these big theatrical movie events do. So I think there's still this situation where there's advantages for streaming, but that's not to say that there isn't still some potential advantages for the theatrical model as well. But undoubtedly, because we have changed the way that we have consumed media, you're seeing a situation where streaming has its advantages.
Yeah, Luis Mendez Movie Report. I agree with you on the comment. I think he's wrong on the Barbieheimer thing, because people were dressing up to go to Barbie. Like I saw when I went to the theater to see it with my kid. You know, my kid got me a Barbie t-shirt to wear to it with her, because she knew I wasn't going to dress up. Yeah. But she's like, you got to do the t-shirt. I was like, fine, no problem. I'm a girl, Dad. I've done way worse than that, I promise you. People were dressing up for that. People wanted to see the atomic bomb go off. One part of the Barbieheimer thing, too, is Christopher Nolan has a lot of goodwill built up with an audience over a period of the last probably at least the last 15 years or so since the Dark Knight trilogy. So people trusted that this was going to be something worth spending money on. Those factors don't exist on Netflix. But here's where I think he's right. There's a quote in this piece. I'm talking about Tom Sarandos' interview in the New York Times. We will link to it. I think this gets to the heart of this whole thing. He says, and I'm going to quote him here, He said, if there's one quote I wish I could take back, it would have been in 2012. I said, we're going to become HBO before HBO could become us. He's talking about Netflix. He's talking about streamers widely, but Netflix specifically. And he said, at that time, HBO was the gold standing. What I should have said back then is we want to be HBO and CBS and BBC and all those different networks. Prestige Elite Program plays a very important role in the culture, but it's very small. It's a boutique business, and we're programming for 650 million people around the world. He's talking about what they call folding your laundry shows, which you watch while you're doing something else. Background noise, you're eating dinner on the couch. We don't think about movies. You know, I think we need to reframe the streaming argument a little bit, because we talk about movies competing with at-home streamer movies. But I'll just take my own family for example. You only have so much bandwidth for entertainment. Let's just broaden it out a little bit. For a two-hour movie that you're going to spend another, at least another hour or more going to get physically get to and get in and get back home and all that. 3 hours of entertainment is a big block of time for folks. We don't think of movie theaters competing with reality TV, but they are. We don't think of movie theaters competing with live sports, but they are. I know a lot of movie theaters now are showing NFL games on Sundays just for the business model, and I think it's a smart move. Netflix, Amazon, Amazon's got NFL now. Netflix is trying to get it. The NBA contract's probably going to go to a streamer. You have all this. WWE just went to Netflix on a 10-year massive, huge deal. That's an every Monday night live event now. I think one of the things that's going to make this streamer thing is movies were a part of people's lives. Everybody went to the Friday night movie, right? Friday yeah. night, date night, Saturday night, family night. My local theater that we go to has Sunday classic movies on Sunday afternoon on cheap. You know, real big, Gone with the Winds, Wizard of Oz. They'll play the classics, the old Ghostbusters, big movies on Sundays. For it's like $5 a ticket. You get to watch a classic movie. If so much of your sports and entertainment is on the streamers, for the next generation, I think he's completely correct here. It's not just being HBO. They're replacing networks. They're replacing going to the movies. The lifestyle of entertainment is getting condensed into these packages. I think that's what theaters are really having to compete with. It's not just the movies. It's just entertainment bandwidth, and I think they're losing.
Yes. Yeah, and which is why if these theaters want to make money, they have to make they have these big event films, these big cultural moments. Kind of goes full circle to what we started the conversation with. I do think there's just been this conditioning where streaming is just able to have so much. And if you have a niche thing, and there's so many niche things out there for people now that they can explore, you could just, you know, the streaming makes it much easier to do that. The theaters just are going to be hard to are having a tough time to compete with that. And we are seeing the theaters trying to do what they can. You know what I mean, I don't know about other people, but when I grew up, there wasn't really that much, if any, alcohol being offered at the theater. Now I go to my local theater, they have a bar set up right there. The chairs have all of a sudden have become much more comfortable. They got the leather chairs that recline back. They're doing the concessions have now expanded from just popcorn to we've got pizza, we got burgers, we got chicken tenders. And now they have these monthly subscriptions. If anybody's interested in maybe wanting to become a little bit more regular theater goer, I would highly suggest if you've got an AMC or Regal near you to look into AMC A-List, Regal Unlimited. It'll save you money. And it's an incredibly good discounts that you can get from them. I'm in agreement with that. The question, though, is can streaming, and I think if streaming ever figures this out, the theaters are really, really, really in trouble. Can streaming ever find a way to get that big cultural moment in the way that theaters can still deliver? If you ever see theaters, streaming ever find that out, and maybe not that they're doing more live events, they might be getting closer to that, then theaters are really in trouble, because now they can start saying, oh, we also have the, we don't just have the stuff that you can watch while you're working at home or doing your laundry. We have stuff that we now have the event that everybody is going to, and it's going to be around the water cooler at work talking about. And that at the very least is still keeping theaters in it. But I do wonder if streamers are going to get closer and closer to that moment where they do have that big event that they can talk about.
Yeah, but we saw, I think Durant Luis Mendez joining us, I think the pandemic and the post-pandemic has shown the ceiling on that. Not that they can't have something trending or viral or something like that, but you have something like the Tiger King phenomenon. That wouldn't have been as big if the pandemic wasn't going on. Everybody's home. Remember, it was early in the pandemic. Everybody's stuck at home. So it's like, oh, let's all talk about this. I don't think you're going to have that. But that's why I bring up the sports contracts. Look, the NFL and the NBA, these are very progressive sports leagues. They see the train coming. The WWE was doing streaming before it got famous. Remember, they did their own channel before anybody else was doing it because they realized, hey, we have to, you know, content is more important than anything else. You got to own your content. These big companies see the train coming and they've decided they're going to get on it before they wind up underneath it. So I think the sports stuff is telling. I think the movie stuff is telling. I think the entertainment stuff is telling with the streamers is they want those events. You can't replace anything like live sports, and they're going to overpay. You know, NBC's they're talking about NBC's new NBA contract. They may lose $1 billion a year, and they don't care because they're so desperate for the eyeballs, right? This is big money stuff, and when you get something like the NFL, which is a cultural phenomenon that you can't match in anything else, and it's going to be, and they're going to get a Sunday package next rights deal. I mean, it's going to happen. There's too much money, too much audience. I just don't know. I don't think theaters are going away, but I think they're going to have to evolve into something else. I know the AMC theaters where I can go and sit. Look, we've talked about it before. I don't like going to the movies, just the physical stuff. I don't like spending the money. I don't like the hassle. Surround sound in the stadium theater is just too loud. I don't like sound coming behind me. That's just one of my things. I don't mind the AMC model where I go and it's, you know, 70, 80 people on in the recliners and it's a little smaller kind of setting. I kind of dig that, right? Like, okay, this ain't bad. I don't mind doing it. I watched the Napoleon movie in that kind of a setting. I watched a couple other movies. I don't mind that other than that idiotic Nicole Kidman thing that we got to sit through. I wish we could geek that into the sun. But I think that model will have a market no matter what, that kind of niche. I know groups go to those things. You can actually rent out those theaters now for a screening a lot. Where I live, we have a really good local theater, one screen downtown. You know, like you used to call it art house, but they have the upstairs loft with it's a full-size projector, but a half-size screen and like 40 or 50 seats. They'll screen movies there. They also do live performances and comedy and stuff. I think those kind of things are going to find a niche. I just think the big Metroplex stadium seating thing, I think that's just done and gone, and we're going to have to let it go and let the movie theater evolve, because the streaming train isn't going to stop. And if anything, it's going to become more a part of folks' life than anything else. They're just going to have to go to the live event model more than anything else, I think.
Well, and maybe we're just headed towards a future where theaters are a little bit more niche, and a lot of this kicking and screaming from the old guard is just that kind of in denial that things are changing. I mean, I don't think there's anything would be completely wrong if theaters just become a little bit more niche. I mean, a lot of things have become more niche in this modern age where everybody basically can be catered to whatever they're into. But if that is what is happening, then studios are going to have to adjust. And I'm not so even though I understand why, well, we got to create the big event film, we have to spend all this money to create these big blockbusters, I don't know how much that's going to be able to keep them afloat just through, if they are going to become more of a niche thing, which is why I think it's a better idea to, again, I'm not saying let's not have big event films. I'm not saying that at all, but I'm just saying that we have to be careful, I think, more with these studios with how much money they're going to be spending if this is becoming a niche product to go to the theaters. I mean, there's a story out there that Gladiator 2, which we get later this year, the budget for that movie got out of control, and the reports are that it was over $300 million. Now that's going to be very hard to make a profit off of that at the theater already, if that's how much the budget was. So if we are in a situation where theaters are becoming more, the theater going experience is becoming more niche, I don't think that necessarily means the end of theaters, but I do think that studios are going to be more careful with these budgets that they're doing for these movies. Because not everything can be a Top Gun Maverick. Not everything can be a Barbenheimer. So look at the two biggest highest grossing films of this year so far, Dune 2 and Godzilla and Kong. We're still not talking about $1 billion hits. Dune 2 is at about $700 million. Godzilla and Kong's going to be around $575 million. So we're still not talking about a massive billion-dollar hit yet this year.
Yeah, Luis Mendez. All right, time we got left, I want to talk a little award stuff. It's not all doom and gloom out there. There's some good news. You love the award stuff. You just got out your latest Oscar update at ordinary-times.com. We'll link to it. Look, it's Dune and everything else right now as we finish up the Cannes Film Festival. It's Dune and everything else, but we also know the Academy kind of has this reactionary thing of when there's a heavy favorite, they're going to pick something to run against it out of the field, right? It's not just going to be Dune versus the field. The Academy folks are going to pick something to kind of push up against it. Human nature, it's just, we got to have a horse race, just like in politics, the Oscars got to have a horse race. So if the question is, you know, Denis Villeneuve is going to get his lifetime achievement here for Dune 2 and get all his flowers and all the awards, who's going to rise up to be the anti-Dune this season, you think?
Well, I'm not even so sure that Denny's even going to get the best director. Like, I mean, if the Oscars were held today, he easily gets it. But the problem that
how big of a snub would that be? Because let's be honest, he's getting it for both. Peter Jackson got it for three films. He'll get nominated or not nominated based on both films together. Let's just be adults, right? Even though it's the second one. Is that as big a snub as the audience folks, the regular folks, would probably take? Like, look, this is a movie. There's the famous story of, other directors running to him, like, how did you make this when they screened it the first time, right?
Yeah.
How big a snub would that be for him to not even get like a nomination, let alone win? Like, he's got to be the favorite to win that, but he may not win it because director's always kind of a screwy thing.
Yeah.
That's going to hit the audience, just the regular people, really weird, right?
Well, it's going to be up to critics. I mean, he got snubbed for the first one, but it wasn't this major, oh my God, moment.
And that's exactly what they said. They're like, oh, well, because we know there's already a second one, it's going to be the Peter Jackson thing. He'll get the nomination for the last one as a kind of overarching thing. That's what people are expecting. To go to the wrestling terms, because we're both like the audience wants the title on Denis Villeneuve, and if they don't get it, they're not going to be happy, and it doesn't matter what kind of story you try to pass it off as, right?
Right, but there is a third Dune coming, which could affect voters' minds into thinking, well, you know, we want to see how he really completes this thing, because this is what Denny has been on record that he wants to put in Dune Messiah and kind of complete the whole Paul Atreides arc. But at the moment, Dune is the movie to beat. This is a little bit of a different situation, though, than when you had Oppenheimer last year, where that thing was just like, it came out and was the movie to beat all the way to Oscar night, or even to Everything Everywhere, where that build up. And by the time we got to the actual awards shows, it was just an unstoppable juggernaut, because we're in a weird situation where, because of the strikes, because of a lot of the things that are affecting the box office this year, the Best Picture race is so foggy and wide open. I still think there's a wide range of possibilities here. I can see a situation where some international players dominate the season. I can see more. I actually can see, still think there's a possibility for Furiosa to sneak in there to get it nominated. And if that happens, that movie on a technical level is going to give Dune a lot of trouble and potentially split votes. I think there's a world where Wicked can get in if that ends up becoming this massive thing on during Thanksgiving. There's a small film coming out in July called Sing Sing about incarcerated felons who are part of this program to do some theater acting. I've heard that's a massive crowd pleaser. And another thing that we don't know about how that's going to affect the season is it is an election year, and Hollywood is a blue town. And if the result goes a certain way, it could affect how they want to vote. Now, what they vote for the Oscars is not going to affect public opinion, but these voters are human beings. They get caught up in thinking this movie sends this message. And I think that's something that we have that is still unknown. Just think about this over how insanely early we still are in this. The Super Bowl, the World Series, the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Finals, the presidential election, the UK election, the Royal Rumble winner in the WWE will all still be decided before the Oscars. We are still in a super early stage, and at the super early stage, Dune is by default the front runner. I will be very surprised if it's still the front runner come the fall, when these fall festivals hit and the studios are presenting what they're going to campaign with. And another problem for Dune that's going to be happening this fall is we have Blitz, which is from Steve McQueen, the director of 12 Years a Slave. It's going to be about the London Blitz. I'm very doubtful we're going to have back-to-back World War II films win Best Picture, but that's the kind of potential technical juggernaut that comes in and can split votes with a Dune. So Dune is easily a lock, I think. I think it's the only 100% lock at the moment to get a Best Picture nomination. But I would be very surprised if it holds on. The last movie that arguably was the front runner from the very beginning to the end was 12 Years a Slave, and that movie got a major scare at the end from Gravity. Even at this point, Oppenheimer, you know, was kind of seen as a potential just also-ran. Even though people knew it was going to be big, they didn't know it was going to become the front runner just yet, because people still were thinking, obsessed with Killers of the Flower Moon. Is this going to be Marty's moment again? Because he's kind of already had a moment with The Departed. So it's still early, but at the moment, I would say Dune 2 is our only absolute lock to get into Best Picture.
Yeah, Mendez Movie Report. Luis Mendez does excellent work on this stuff. Make sure you subscribe to his Substack. I do. You should, too. He does all sorts of different things. Doing a lot more podcasting hits these days, too. Some other media appearance. If you do media and you want to talk movies, make sure you give him a ring. Let folks know where they can follow you and keep up with you until we get you back on Hurtel, my friend.
Yeah, MendezMovieReport.com. There you can find, I try to do at least one big weekly movie review. I won't be getting to do one this weekend because there's like nothing coming out really. But I also do, I have my Oscar projections up over there. I've been trying to do a list of my favorite films from each decade. And I do have a podcast coming up. My hope is early July. I'm going to be talking some movies and video games and award season stuff with fellow critics and even some casual moviegoers to kind of get their perspective outside of the bubble of being the big movie fanatic. If you want to find me on social media, Facebook, Threads, Instagram, Twitter/X, Mendez Movie RPT.
Yep, you do great work, sir. Love talking about you. Love that we can talk, not just the movie nerdism, although you're all over that sort of stuff, but you know the business stuff. You can talk about it in plain language. We appreciate you greatly. And now that you've come off your Godzilla high a little bit, you're back to being a normal person that we can actually have conversation with, because I know you just totally geeked out over the Godzilla for the first part of the year. There'll be and more
last, and last of the year, Godzilla Minus One, Oscar winning movie.
Yeah, they don't worry, they're gonna make plenty more of them. They're still making money, right? We'll never get rid of them. We'll never get rid of him. Mendez Movie Report. Luis Mendez, our good friend. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Welcome back to Herd Tell. So why do we talk about movies on here? Well, it's a cultural thing, but it's also something that's a smidge bit kind of crosses into one of my discomfort zones. I don't really like going to the movies anymore. I've talked about it with Lewis before. They're too loud, especially with the surround sound now. It's a hassle. It's crowded. It's really expensive. It gets very expensive. But I, you know, have teens and young adults as kids, and they want to go to the movies sometimes. Now, some movies I want to go see. I went and saw Top Gun Maverick 3 times in the theaters. Now, that's really rare for me. But part of that was because the first time I went and saw it in IMAX, and the screen's so big you miss stuff. So then I wanted to watch it at the normal theater I go to. But I will say this about the movie theater experience, especially when I was I spent a lot of time in Atlanta back in the fall and the winter because one of my kids was down there doing a program. And up even other places, but things like the new AMC theaters where they've kind of gone to a smaller theater thing. You have, you know, 70 to 100 people, you get the recliners, that kind of thing. That kind of an environment's a little more appealing to me. So when I see theaters that do that, I'm a little more into it. The stadium style thing just has kind of killed me. And the other thing about the stadium is it's just so viscerally loud. I don't like it. I don't like surround sound. I don't like sound coming behind me. Now, that's my own little, you know, peculiarity why I don't like it. But the movies are a hassle. So unless it's something really exceptional, I'm just not going to go. Or unless one of the kids just really bugs me like, hey, go, and I'll go just to spend some time with them. The other problem is a lot of the movies just aren't very good. I remember I took my now 18-year-old. She wasn't quite 18 at the time. We went and saw the Napoleon movie. I'm a big history buff. That's the kind of movie I really like. And I'm glad I went and saw it because it was epic and it was a spectacle, but it also had a lot of problems. And I probably won't rewatch it because it was, you know, I had some issues with it. And it was good as a movie making thing, but it wasn't a very good movie, if that makes sense. But this is why I bring Luis Mendez on to talk about movies, because I have a bias towards movies where I just don't like going to the movies. But a lot of people still go to the movies. And entertainment is a huge part of our culture. I don't know if it's a headwater or a tailwater of our culture, but it's still a part of our culture. And the changing things with streaming and the way entertainment works with the movies and Disney and Netflix and Amazon dominating everything, these things are important to our culture to understand. And if you don't think they affect our politics, you're crazy. As I've had Lewis bring up, Lewis actually used to do kind of data sets and maps and stuff for politics. So he knows what he's talking about with politics as well. And he went, heck with this. I'm going to go review movies for a living. And I don't blame him one little bit. But this stuff does affect, you know, an election year, movie theater attendance changes. Movie awards are very political. Of course, we know there's a little bit of a bias in Hollywood. So Hollywood really likes to have, you know, subversive movies that are against certain presidents they don't like and certain world leaders. Certain causes get more attention in Hollywood. And of course, my own maxim is the easiest way to get an award in Hollywood is to make a movie about Hollywood, because nobody loves Hollywood as much as Hollywood does. But even that sort of stuff's changing. We've seen, you know, independent movies that target certain audiences do really, really well at the box office. These are all things that are worth talking about, and they're important parts of understanding our culture and understanding the times we live in. Because remember, things like culture and politics is really a study in people, and how people want to be entertained, whether it's at the movies or streaming at home, is a good piece of insight into how that culture is currently going and what it's thinking and what it wants. Even when they say they don't know what they want, money talks. And then right now, folks are saying they don't like what's in the movies. Something to pay attention to. And that'll do it for Herd Tell. However you're listening or watching, whether it's on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, any of the podcasting platforms, we just recently got onto Spreaker. They've got the speaker, I'm not sure how you say it, but We're on there now, so they get the live feed every time a new episode goes right on there. So if you're using that platform, great. Things like the Podcast Addict, the aggregate podcasting sites, we see a lot of data where some of y'all are getting us through there. That's great. We're even over in India on some. We're in Germany on a podcasting platform. We're worldwide, so wherever you are, you're going to be able to find us. We appreciate it. Make sure you're leaving a comment and a rating. That's really important. Let those, not only the platforms, but other folks know our program's worth checking out. Since it only costs you a click to listen to the show, and it's always free, if you do us a favor, use a couple more clicks to tell folks on your social media if you liked a program, if you liked a guest. We really appreciate it. Make sure you're checking out the show notes, herdtel.substack.com. That will have links to all of our guests. Make sure you're following them on their social media and supporting their work. Give them feedback. Give us feedback. herdtelshow@gmail.com. herdtelshow on the Twitter. I'm at 4 for the fire on the Twitter. If you want to interact with me directly, just punch in my name. I'll come right up. You'll see my big floating head. And if you want to see more of us, the YouTube channel, Herdtel on YouTube, doing very well. Appreciate you folks. You have the video portion. Those are the interview segments. Those are there in full video, full color, 1080. I would recommend my portion. You might want to turn that down to 720. I'd look better in less high def. That's just my opinion. Let's just all be honest here. But also the full podcast are on there. If you want to just listen on YouTube, like a lot of people, I listen to a lot of podcasts on YouTube because I have YouTube music on my phone. So if you want to just listen to the podcast on YouTube, you can do that as well. Every episode going back, I didn't realize this. We just did the upload for Spreaker. So I was looking at it, 714 and counting episodes of Herd Tell. Some of those are best of, some of those are compilations, but that's a lot of work over the years. We'll keep doing it as long as you keep listening, and we appreciate you greatly. So until we talk to you again on Herd Tell, wherever you and yours are across the street or around the world, we hope you are well. We hope you are well fed, and we will talk to you soon for more Herd Tell. All the music on Herd Tell is provided under a creative content license from monstercat.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.